I guess most everyone's heard the story of the cowboy who was out riding and his horse got spooked and threw him. And as he was thrown, he plummeted over a cliff and was heading toward the bottom of the chasm, grabbed a branch on his way down. And there he was, stuck between the cliff and thousands of feet below the crags, the rocks that he would certainly die on. Realizing his predicament, he looks up to the heavens and he says, "Is there anyone up there who can help me?" A voice comes and says, "If you have faith, let go." And the cowboy says, "Is there anybody else up there who can help me?" I think a lot of times we share that feeling. There are times when God tells us to let go. When God says there are things that you do not need to cling to. But these things are our security. These are the things that cause us to feel as though we are safe, as though there is nothing that can happen to us. But God says, let go. This morning, I want us to talk about a very simple idea. But yet, as we discuss this idea, I think as we look throughout the corridors of history, we find that these are the things that Christians have struggled with. These are things that people of the world have struggled with. These are the occasions when we oftentimes have problems having the faith that we need to have to let go and to trust fully in the Lord. This morning, I want us to examine the things that God tells us we must do if we are going to be pleasing to Him. As we consider this idea of letting go, as we consider the idea of what we must give up in this life, I suppose as we look throughout history, one of the things that people have grappled with the most is letting go of self. As we consider that, we have to understand what a drawback it is in the service of God when we cling so desperately to our own wishes, to our own ideas, to the things that we believe are the best. Sometimes I'm afraid that our perceived self-worth keeps us from recognizing our lowliness before God. Have you ever noticed in the Bible how often God talks of humility? When we start in the Garden of Eden and when we continue all the way over to the book of Revelation, the pages of the Bible are replete with those who God tells, either through example or by direct command, you must give up your pride. We look at the examples that God has given of prideful people. We look at books such as the book of Proverbs, where God says, you cannot hold to this prideful view that you know it all, that you are the one who is in control. And as we look at all of those commands, all of those examples, certainly we understand that God is seeking to deliver that message to us. Even as we look to those that He would choose as His leaders, we understand that from very early times, God would only choose those who were humble, those who recognized their place before Him. Now, on occasions, those leaders would forget that, and God would have to remind them of it. But yet, we look and we see that that was a requirement for the one who would be a successful leader of God's people. We just read together Numbers chapter 20. As we consider that reading, I want us to back up to Numbers chapter 12. And there notice what's said about perhaps one of the greatest leaders that mankind has ever known. As we think about the man Moses, we think about a man who stands as a hallmark as far as those who were faithful in their service to God, faithful leaders of God. And as we look here in chapter 12, we find that there's problems that have arisen. Moses' siblings are coming against him here. We look in verse 1 and it says, Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Cushite woman whom he had married, for he married a Cushite woman. And they said, has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has He not spoken through us also? And the Lord heard it. And verse 3 is the one I want us to hone in on. He says, now the man Moses was very meek, more than all people who were on the face of the earth. What a compliment. For the Lord Himself to look down and say that this man who was leading the people of Israel was the most meek, the most humble man who was walking the face of the earth. That's why Moses was successful. That's why even in difficult times, the Lord was patient with them, because Moses in his humility would look to God and would seek the answer from God. How did Moses make it all of those years leading the children of Israel? It was his humility. It was his trust that God knew best. But then we come to chapter 20. And I suppose of passages that would be nice to leave out of the Bible if we could, this would be one of them, wouldn't it? Because we see this man who struggled with this rebellious, tumultuous crowd. This man who dealt with these people who murmured and complained against the Lord and against him and against his brother and against everything in their situation. And Moses stopped being humble. And as things didn't go according to the way he wished, we see in verse 11 that he lifted up his hand and he struck the rock twice with his staff. And we back up to verse 10, and preceding that we find that Moses says, "Hear now, you rebels, shall we bring water out of this rock?" And the water comes. But God is displeased. And as we notice there his words, God says, "Moses and Aaron, you can't go into the promised land. And the reason you can't go is because you did not believe me to uphold me as holy in the eyes of the people of Israel." Here was the meekest, most humble man on the face of the earth. But on this occasion, he failed to give God the glory. He clung to himself. He didn't let go. He said, "Must we bring water out of this rock?" And on that instance, then he disobeyed God. And we think, well, that's a little tough. Isn't that a little too strict? I mean, after all, didn't he follow God all of these years? Didn't he bear with these people all of these years? And here one mistake and God's ready to keep him out of the land of Canaan? God knows what he's doing. Because God has a demand for his people. He has a demand whether you are Moses living in that time or whether you are you living in this time, that you must let go of self. And totally, in every way, give God glory. Why is that? Well, God knows that we cannot love Him if we have an undue love of self. God knows that we cannot serve two masters. That if we are the one who is seeking to be in control, if you and I are the ones who are seeking to run the show, to keep things the way we think they ought to go, we're not going to listen very much to God. And that has an effect on our perspective of life. I think of a passage as we consider the words of Jesus Himself that He spoke over in John chapter 8. It says, Jesus said to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who commits sin is a slave to sin. The slave does not remain in the house forever. The son remains forever." We rarely think of ourselves in this way, do we? The whole idea of slavery is repulsive to a people who live in a free nation, right? We don't think of ourselves as a slave in any way, much less a slave to sin. But if you and I have an undue love for ourselves, if you and I are looking at ourselves and we're saying we are the ones in control, we are the ones who understand what to do and when to do it and how to do it, and we don't listen to God, Jesus Christ is describing us. Jesus Christ is saying to us, we are a slave. We are the ones who are given over to slavery because we are clinging to self and refusing to follow after God. I think about as well what we read in Psalm 10, verse 4. The psalmist says, "In the pride of his face, the wicked does not seek him. All his thoughts are, there is no God." This morning, if you're not a Christian, I want you to think about what we're discussing. If you're old enough to understand what I'm talking about, you're old enough to read these passages and understand what God is saying, I want you to let go of self. And I want you to think about your condition with God. Because you are a slave of sin. You are the one who in his wickedness does not recognize him. And that sounds hard, and I guess it is. That sounds difficult because it is difficult to comprehend. But God says you got to let go. God says if you are holding on to your ways and you are saying to him, I have no need to follow after you. Or saying to him, there will come a day when I'll follow after you, but it's not this day. You're not letting go. You're not giving God the glory that he deserves because you're refusing him. You see, when we believe our self-worth to be more important than it is, when we love ourselves more than God, we cannot be what he desires of us. Because it's only when you and I let go that we can perceive that God is the one who is supreme. It's only when you and I let go of ourselves that we can understand that God is the one who runs the show. God is the one who is in control. And God is the one who has every answer you and I could possibly ever need. I want to take just a minute and explore that thought through the eyes of one of the prophets of the Old Testament. Go with me, if you will, to Isaiah chapter 40. And we're going to begin in verse 12. Isaiah chapter 40, verse 12. And as Isaiah here is bringing the message of God to the people and seeking to convince them that they want to follow him and not these other false gods, I want you to listen to what he says about Jehovah, about the God who calls on us to serve him. As we look at verse 12, he says, who has measured the waters in the hollow of his hand and marked off the heavens with a span, enclosed the dust of the earth in a measure and weighed the mountains in scales and the hills in a balance? Who has measured the Spirit of the Lord or what man shows him his counsel? Whom did he consult, and who made him understand, who taught the path of justice, and taught him knowledge, and showed him the way of understanding? Behold, the nations are like a drop from a bucket, and are accounted as the dust on the scales, because he takes up the coastlands like fine dust. Lebanon would not suffice for fuel, nor are its beasts enough for a burnt offering. Isaiah asked a number of rhetorical questions to get the people to understand when you are dealing with God. You are dealing with one who is so magnificent, who is so great, who is so powerful that we don't have the ability to comprehend his majesty. That's the picture of God you and I need to have. That's the picture of God that we need to have. And let me tell you, that idea of God is assaulted every day. You know, there was a time even when those who perhaps were not faithful to the Lord seemed to have a respect at least for His position. Though they might not follow Him, they at least recognized Him as God. You and I are living in a day and age where if someone believes in God, many times what they're seeking to do is to take Him and remake Him and remold Him on our level. To make Him a God who is like us. You look at the advertisements for churches who are seeking to increase their numbers. You look at the advertisements for groups that are seeking to bring God down to a level that you and I can be comfortable with. That you and I don't really have to shake and shudder in His presence. We don't have to be fearful of this God. And that's a God who is not Jehovah. Because when we read words like we find in the book of Isaiah, the Lord is telling us, when you come to me, you are not coming to a man. You are not coming to some false god. You're not coming to some weak deity out there. You are coming to the one who controls it all. And if you're not a Christian, I want you to think about that. Because this God who is so far above and beyond anything you and I could ever even comprehend becoming, is a God who has condescended to us to say, let go of yourself and cling to me. Because in doing so, you will realize that you have none of the answers, but yet I have them all. For you and I to be faithful, we've got to let go of self. I would say as well, that as we consider this topic, another temptation that we have is clinging to people. Sometimes it's not so much self that holds us back, but rather those who are around us. That you and I perhaps desire to become better. You and I desire to let go of self and to cling to God. But because of those who are in our midst, because of those with whom we seek to keep company, we somehow refuse to let go of them and to fully grasp God. Sometimes it calls on us to let go of our companions in order to show our proper respect for God. Sometimes it requires us to let go of those who are around us so that we can fully grasp the will of God. Let's look at an example of a man who failed to do this. Go with me over to 1 Kings chapter 22. 1 Kings chapter 22. I tell you, the Ahab family is an interesting group of people. I guess morbidly interesting might be the way we should put that, is because they were so wicked and so corrupt and corrupted anybody who got in their midst. While Ahab was ruling, as well as a son or two of his ruling, there was a king down in Judah by the name of Jehoshaphat, who was perhaps one of the best kings that Judah knew. But yet it's interesting, when Jehoshaphat got in the company of Ahab, he would just forget everything that he ought to do. And such is the case as we find here in the book of 1 Kings. As we look at chapter 8, Ahab is wanting to go to battle. And he says we're told in verse 8, the king of Israel said to Jehoshaphat, "There is yet one man by whom we may inquire of the Lord, Micaiah the son of Imlah. But I hate him, for he never prophesies good concerning me, but evil." Now let's back up for a minute and put that in context. Jehoshaphat's come down. Ahab's ready to go to battle. And he says, "Will you go with me, Jehoshaphat? Will you go to battle with me?" And Jehoshaphat says, "Well, sure, I'll go. But let's contact the Lord first. Let's ask the Lord His opinion." And Ahab brings out all of the false prophets that Jezebel has brought into the land, brings out all of the prophets of the Baals of Phoenicia. And they say, "Go. You're going to be successful. Go and have a good time and you're going to win." And Jehoshaphat says, "Isn't there a prophet of God around here? Isn't there a Jehovah prophet who we could talk to?" And thus the reply, "Yeah, Micaiah, but I hate him. He never says anything good about me." And Jehoshaphat stops him and says, "Don't say things like that. Don't let the king speak in that way." Well, kind of summarize the story. Micaiah is brought in, as you'll recall, and he says, "If you go, you're going to be killed in battle," telling this to Ahab. "The enemy's going to win. Israel's going to be defeated. You're going to die." And he gets smacked because of what he said. Gets put in prison because of what he said. But he didn't change his message. He said, "You wait. You mark my words. Everything I've said is going to come to pass." Ahab goes ahead and goes into battle, but he's scared. He dresses up like a common soldier. But what's of more interest to me as we look at this is what we find about King Jehoshaphat. As we look over to verse 29, after hearing all of these things, it says, "So the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, went up to Ramoth-Gilead." Despite the words of Micaiah, despite the words of Jehovah, despite hearing this prophecy of defeat, Jehoshaphat chooses to go to battle. Why? He wouldn't let go of his friends. This Ahab family somehow was so near and dear to his heart that whenever they would propose something of this, he would cling to it. He would give allegiance to them. And we find out he goes fleeing for his life. God says, "The only reason I let you survive is because you have done good. The only reason I let you out of this is because in the past you have done good things." But what an example for us of a man who knew better, who refused to let go of his friends and to follow the will of God. As we consider that, I want us to consider what the Lord says to us. You remember what Paul says? You remember what he tells us in 1 Corinthians 15? If you grew up in a Christian household, I can almost guarantee you, you cut your teeth on this verse when it came friendships. That your parents would tell you, you remember evil companions, what they do. Tell you that before you go out with a group of friends? Well, he's right. Do not be deceived. Bad company ruins good morals. Evil company corrupts good habits. Wake up from your drunken stupor, as is right, and do not go on sinning. For some have no knowledge of God. I say this to your shame. And I would remind us here that Paul is talking about those evil companions being Christians. People there in the church of Corinth who were seeking to lead them astray. Sometimes because someone wears the name Christian, it does not guarantee the fact that they are following after Jehovah. To our younger people, let me give you this admonition. I know you've heard it from your parents, and you will keep hearing it from your parents probably till you're 40, 50, 60 years old. Because parents understand what bad company can do to you. I tell you, as a school teacher, I can testify to that as well. I can see how easy it is for young people to desire to be with the popular crowd so much that they sell out on God and they cling to bad company. Be careful. It's a whole lot better to sit home on a Saturday night without a friend than to lose your soul. It's a whole lot better to go through your teenage years without a boyfriend or a girlfriend than to lose your soul. And as we get older, we need to remember that same lesson. Jehoshaphat was not a young man. Jehoshaphat was not a teenager there who was easily influenced. He was a great big grown-up man who knew better. But yet he did it anyway. The lesson for us is no matter what point in our life we are in, we had better be careful. Because if we cling to bad companions, we're going to be brought down. And the sad thing is, sometimes it's just not companions. Sometimes it's our own physical family. I tell you, I feel blessed that I have never been put in a situation where I have had to choose between physical family and the Lord. But I just imagine this morning to a group this size, that I'm talking to somebody who has, probably several somebodies. You know what it means. You know what it means to let go, to drop loose of the branch and to feel as though you're falling only to be grasped by God and saved. You remember what the Lord said as He was giving His apostles their instructions going out on the limited commission? He says, "Do not think that I have come to bring peace to the earth. I have not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I have come to set a man against his father, and a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and a person's enemies will be those of his own household. Whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and whomever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me." Boy, that just blows the world's impression of Jesus Christ, doesn't it? A man who is so loving, a man who never calls on us to get into difficult situations. This is not the world's view of Jesus, but this is Jesus. He says there are occasions when you may just have to turn loose. When you may just have to let go of those who are dear to you, who are near to you because they're family. Question is, do we have faith enough to do it? I understand that there are occasions when children come to the truth and their parents put down the fist and they say, "You are not going to become a Christian." I know of situations like that firsthand. I know there are times when husbands and wives have to deal with that as well, and I understand the marriage laws. But yet anytime someone calls upon us to reject the Lord, to reject our faith, and we cling to that person, we are not giving God the glory He deserves. Christ wants us to know that giving anyone, even our physical family, allegiance over Him is unacceptable. For you and I to be right with the Lord, we've got to let go. Final point I'd like for us to consider this morning. When we think about letting go of self and letting go of people around us, I suppose we could say in many ways this sums it all up. When we say that we must let go of the world. Now I understand that generally when we talk about that, we're thinking of wickedness. We're thinking of bad things. We're thinking about drinking and drug abuse and prostitution and all that kind of thing. And that's right. We got to let go of that kind of stuff when we become Christians. We have no company with that kind of behavior. In fact, remember what John told us. Let me back up here. Over in 1 John chapter 2, verses 15 through 17. He says, "Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the desires of the flesh and the desires of the eyes and pride and possessions, is not from the Father, but is from the world. And the world is passing away along with its desires, but whoever does the will of God abides forever." You talk about warnings from cover to cover. We find that as well. Starting in the Garden of Eden, going all the way over to the Christians of Revelation who are told, don't give in and don't give up. God says, don't allow the wicked things of this world to entice you because you'll perish. But yet I would suggest that that's only half of the meaning of letting go of the world. Yes, we let go of wickedness. But I would suggest to us that sometimes this applies to wholesome activities as well. You and I have discussed before that we live in a generation of free time. We live in a generation where we work less, we have to work less than probably any other generation that's ever lived. And that's opened up doors and avenues for all kinds of activities. We got to be careful. We got to be careful. We are rich. I don't want anybody in here saying, that's not me. I'm not rich. You're rich. We are prosperous. We are blessed with time. And if you and I begin taking those blessings and heaping in all of these wholesome but worldly activities, and God starts getting nudged out of first place, we are worldly people. We are as worldly as the drunkard laying there in the gutter. We are as worldly as the prostitute on the corner. Because what we have done is we have allowed the things of this world to get in our way of serving God. Let me remind you of another very familiar passage. As we think about these activities, we think about what Paul says in Romans 12, verses 1 and 2. He says, "I appeal to you therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, who is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to the world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect." Whenever you and I are tempted to allow things or activities or whatever to dominate our lives to the point that we don't open our Bibles outside of this building, where we don't pray outside of this building, where we don't have a Christian fellowship with each other as we ought to have, opening our homes to hospitality, we are worldly people. We got to let go of that. We've got to realize that for all the prosperity in our country and all the free time of our generation, God is number one. And nothing should interfere with that. Whether it's self, whether it's companionship, whether it is this world, to be right with God, we must let go. question is, do I need to let go? Am I being kept from God because of these things? Thank you for your good attention this morning. Go ahead and get your songbook out and turn to the number that's been announced. Look at your own life. If you're not a Christian, you have deceived yourself into thinking that you are in control. If you are a Christian, but you're letting companions lead you in the wrong direction, you're letting worldly activities, whether as we would classify them, wicked or wholesome, get in the way, changes need to be made. This morning, if you understand what it means to become a Christian, if you understand that your sins will be washed away in the waters of baptism by the grace and mercy of God, you're ready. This morning, if you understand that what you've done in this life has kept you from being right with God, we'll be glad to pray with you about that as well. Whatever it takes to let go and to cling to Him, we encourage you to do that this morning as we stand and sing together.